Hello, and welcome to Whom Pods Destroy, a Star Trek discussion podcast. I'm Terry DeFellum. If you're a first-time listener, then this is a podcast that focuses mainly on the original series. I'm the host, and each episode I'm joined by Derek Mantle and Graham Sibley. On this edition, we will be discussing the second season episode, Wolf in the Fold. This is not our favourite episode. If you rate this episode highly, you may not want to spend the next 40 minutes listening to three guys badmouthing it, in which case, let us part company with no harm done.
Now, Whom Pods Destroy.
Hello and welcome. I'm Terry and I'm joined as always by Derek and,
Hello. And
by Graham.
Hello.
How are we doing, chaps? All right?
Yes, very
it
well.
It seems like ages since we were last here.
It certainly does.
It does, actually.
Yeah. It does, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, we're actually recording a different location this episode and the one before, listeners. You may have noticed. You may not. But we relocated to Graham's quarters, and it's very nice. It's a different vibe, quite relaxing.
Yes, it's very nice.
And we're sat here. Graham lives in a place called Argalius, and he runs a little casbah where there's belly dancers and various...
And the law of the land is
love.
The law at Graham's place is love, indeed. So we're all relaxing here on our cushions. Yeah, we're going to be discussing Wolf in the Fold. This is an episode which would be regarded as problematic, I think, in the best of terms.
I'm sure that would be a label on the actual blog post.
I'm going to tag it as problematic. I'm also going to be attaching the tag of New Wave to it as well. Listeners may well recall our conversations on New Wave writers. Mm-hmm. And their influence on Star Trek and the amount of work they did on Star Trek, guys like Harlan Ellison, for example. One of those guys is Robert Block, Bob Block, who wrote this episode, Wolf in the Fold, as well as Cat's Paw, and as well as What a Little Girl's Made Of. And this episode is essentially a mystery horror episode, right?
Yeah.
Which then morphs into a ghost story. At the end,
with the courtroom drama,
Shoved in. So I mean, there's quite a lot going on.
There's this episode.
Probably, and I think this has to be addressed from the off, so that perhaps we can then move on to frothier topics afterwards. It also has a huge dollop of misogyny in the episode.
Yeah,
which is really apparent from the start. And indeed, a huge dollop of racism as well. If you consider the casbah and the kind of Asian connotations with regards to Asian stereotypes about what Asia is like.
Yeah.
It's a very I will say I'm not going to say old fashioned, unfortunately, because I don't think it is old fashioned. But there are conceptions about Asia that are not entirely accurate and probably some people would regard to be offensive. It starts with the belly dancer, who is then, how best to describe this, hired by Jim Kirk so that he can hook up with Scotty, so Scotty can go away and have sex with her, so that this can overcome Scotty's resentment toward women, because he's had an accident. He hurt his head. And the accident was caused by a woman.
Oh my God!
All of this is in the pre-credit. This is in the cold open.
Yeah.
We haven't even got to space the final frontier by the time this.
And this is under doctor's orders as well.
This is.
I mean, we've said before in this episode, in previous episodes, why they get psychologists and psychiatrists coming in. And McCoy doesn't get his hands dirty with it, and we find out in this episode just exactly why, because he's so rubbish at it. He's absolutely not got the first clue about psychology. Okay, there's been an accident in engineering, and
Scotty's
bumped his head.
Yeah.
and woken up, and all of a sudden he is a rampant misogynist, because that's what happened. When, oh god, bloody women in my engineering deck, and like that, yeah, caused an explosion. Whoops, yes, probably spilt some nail varnish on something, blew something up. Yeah, I mean, let's face it. I mean, look, starships in Star Trek are particularly explosive.
Yes,
you can't get anything. Anything can't break. You can be bumped on the other side of the ship, and all of a sudden your desk is going to explode. They've got exploding desks. I'm like, you know, surely, what the hell is Starfleet engineering doing? Putting things, or yeah, don't give it too many bangs, because like, you know, the resistors in this, they have a tendency to be a bit. Explode.
Yes, they explode for no, well, no, I thought for no reason. It's space. That's how it works. I mean, that isn't actually the end of the unpleasantness, of course, because it transpires that the poor woman, the poor sex worker who is out with Scotty, is murdered, brutally murdered, stabbed, in fact. And Scotty is found holding the knife. And so this is the setup for the episode. I'll skip the full details of it, but. There's many criticisms of this episode, in particular in regard to these aspects, and they range largely. They begin with Kirk and McCoy, who seem absolutely insistent on proving Scotty's innocence throughout this whole thing, and seem to be almost uninterested, or at least consider the matter that women are being murdered to be an inconvenience to this. They don't feel that, initially at least, that Scotty's capable of doing that. And so their investigations are based upon that premise. So Scotty's, you know, he's not locked away or anything like that. He's not even, it would appear, arrested. Obviously, as we know, the law in Argalius is love, and maybe they don't go in for that sort of thing. And of course, the thing is, they then also acknowledge that he could do it, because they later on, you know, as the body count mounts up, they seem to think, well, actually, perhaps he could have done it because of the blow to his head and because he now hates women. And it even then, they're still, you know, doing their best to try and get him off the hook. I consider this to be quite unseemly.
It is unseemly. There's no two ways about it. It is just the premise of this episode is shockingly bad. I mean, even in the 1960s, I would think people would have been watching this episode with their jaws open, because I mean, it's almost Edwardian how it's actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Put together.
What do you think, Dad? Do you agree? Do you think it gets a pass because it's 1960s, or do you think that it's not?
Would you let your daughters watch this episode?
No, I mean, the other thing is that it's the boys' club. Okay, they're on a jolly, okay, you know, and they are going to houses of what we would call disrepute, I suppose, you know, because the thing is that there's a conversation after Scotty's gone off with the lady. He's going to walk off with her somewhere
into the fog,
yes. And then Kirk
that's staying in, by the way.
Yes.
Captain Cock,
which is quite apt in this, yes. this time.
Carry on.
And they're talking about going off to this another house where the women do something, and then was it McCoy shuts him down before he actually describes Captain Cock describes what it's going to be about, you know. Yeah. It's
Boner and Cock.
Yeah.
They always stop it before they describe what actually is going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Yes, I know this place where the women will let you have sex with them.
Yeah.
And do all manner of stuff.
You mean she's gonna have sex with you?
That's great.
But the feel better already.
The thing is that
the bump of my head has gone completely.
It's the three lads together, right?
Yes.
They're all mates, and the thing is that they can't do anything wrong. And as you've both pointed out, the thing is that up until a certain point, you know, Scotty is believed by Kirk to be innocent. Even though I do feel that actually Kirk, on the other flip side, is later on you feel that sort of Kirk is abiding by all of the cultural rules and mores of this society, and he's quite diplomatic.
To his credit, yes, he knows the law and he knows his responsibilities
and
his obligations.
Does seem to be, but it is, you know, it is problematic that these three guys who are on the jollies, and you know, you don't immediately sort of put Scotty into protective custody.
Yes.
You know, in case there is something wrong with him.
Yes.
And as you said, McCoy is a rubbish psychologist, a rubbish physician, because the thing is that, you know, if he believes that Scotty has been knocked on the head and they might have changed his personality or something, do something about it, man. You know?
Yeah, don't take him to some resort and get him laid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's not how you resolve issues like that.
No, going to see a sex worker probably is going to make things worse rather than better.
I mean, it's just, okay. I mean, it's the setup for the story.
Yeah,
I appreciate that, but I mean, goodness, it's
the other thing
pretty
is
embarrassing.
At the beginning, you see, again, I've gone about like the first time we've watched, we were actually teenagers or younger. I remember watching it sort of like when I was younger. So
yeah,
I was
me too.
Pre-teen, and at that time, all the sex things would have just washed over me. I didn't have a problem with the women dancing around. I wasn't interested in this. I was interested in, you know, Captain Kirk.
as he was
Dr.
known
Boner.
Back then. Cock and Boner.
That's a great sort of a cop show there.
For you, man.
Probably. Yeah. But the thing is, when I saw the opening sequence for the first time, it reminded me of the old Carry On films, actually. You know, there was one Carry On film where there, I think it was one of these spy ones with, what's his name, Williamson, sort of like the, and then they're in that sort of, it's just a very shorthand.
I think you're thinking of Carry On Spying, actually.
Carry On Spying, that's what I was reminded of. It seemed to be just so rubbish like that. You know, I know that Carry On films are held up as being as high
cultural
art.
Icons,
but
yeah,
they was cheap.
Yeah, they
and
were.
Was,
they were
and
cheap
some
and
of
often
it was nasty.
Crass.
And that's what I sort of see it as being as well.
Yeah. So I mean, it's the first. That's so much for the first victim. The second victim is actually your crew member, a member of the Enterprise. Doesn't elevate her in any way, but she is. And she booms down. She's allowed to go into a room on her own with this guy who is accused of murder, and then obviously she in turn is murdered, and then it carries on, and we have the séance, which all ties into, you know, again more trope. I mean, this the Argalians are a shorthand for sort of like North African, Middle Eastern sort of like culture, or at least
in
you know, racist
commas,
perception of
backward culture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the whole empathic contact, and Scott's above there in his spaceship telling them, "Oh, you don't want to trust that." And Kurt's going, well, what else do I do? In a kind of, you know, these people are backward, you know, they're less advanced than we are.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's your mate who's the guy who's just been accused of murder, and they haven't had a murder there in centuries. So anyway, it's just, that's just, the more I talk about it, actually, the more awful it's becoming.
Well, also, the thing is that I found, we were talking in the last episode about, like, in most Star Trek things, you don't see bodies, you know.
No.
This time we did.
You do.
And it actually is quite, for a TV show, it's actually quite gratuitous.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
I mean, during these, we are preoccupied with the unpleasantness, but is there any merit, dramatic merit in what we're seeing here? I mean, can you discern any skill in the way that this is presented and this is done? I mean, can you remember back to maybe when you were young enough for this episode and maybe these other concepts were alien to you. You
well,
didn't know.
Yeah.
Or you always had this?
No, I can probably recollect the time when it was just an episode of Star Trek. But then again, the amount of drama that it actually brings about is no more than you'd get in a Scooby-Doo episode.
Right.
I mean, that's the level of the writing in this episode, as far as a murder mystery is concerned.
Yeah. Yeah.
What hasn't helped this episode is the fact that for the last 50 years, and especially over the last 20 years, we're more used to watching procedural crime dramas where the whole thing of investigation and what to do when a murder's happened is we know what's going to happen almost immediately. But they don't do any investigation into this. Mm. It's just, oh, did you do it? I can't remember.
Yeah.
That's it. And then they come up with this awful idea of the psycho tricorder.
Yes. I know.
So how many episodes have we gone through where this would have become really useful?
Mm.
Of course, you know, in other episodes afterwards, yeah, that would become really useful. Why don't we get one of those? No, we'll just forget we ever had that.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I mean, it goes back to the fact that Star Trek is essentially an anthology series rather than the continuing one. It just adds to how ill-conceived this whole premise really is. On the matter of the misogyny, and I think we will try and move on to frothier topics, because we don't want this to be an unpleasant experience for people listening to it. But I mean, there's the courtroom sequence. I just want to raise something that was said in the courtroom sequence very briefly, but before I do, a lot of this is Bob Block and his kind of obsession with Jack the Ripper.
Yes.
Yeah. Obviously, you guys, listeners, will notice Jack the Ripper is responsible for this, and Jack the Ripper is an ethereal creature who can occupy human bodies and perform these acts of murder. And he has written a number of different topics. There's a TV show, the name of which I can't remember.
The first time
which he wrote, which is very similar to Wolf in
Fold, Thriller.
Thriller.
Boris Karloff's Thriller.
That, thank you, Boris Karloff's Thriller. Yeah.
You see, the thing, this the original story was called
Yours Truly,
Jack the Ripper, and he has continued this on in various different forms.
Yeah. We discussed New Wave. We talked about Dangerous Visions, the book, and in that book is a story by Robert Block, and it's called A Toy for Juliet, which again is a story about Jack the Ripper. It's sequeled, actually, by Harlan Ellison immediately afterwards. And obviously, Bob Block is the author of the novel Psycho, of which is synonymous with violence against women. I mean, it's fair to say Bob Block has had a preoccupation with violence against women, to which we won't go into too much. But I mean, there is a preoccupation about Jack the Ripper for me that I think over the last, and I'm going to say 50 years, but in for a long time, with Jack the Ripper, that I don't think is entirely healthy. I have to say, I think that this was a human being and a murderer of women and a savage, inhuman human being for all that, but not an alien, not a spirit, not a ghost. And mythologizing, is that the right word?
I think is
entirely unhelpful. The reason why that we do this is because it helps us perhaps to understand the brutality of his crime. But at the same time, because it's so unspeakable a crime, but at the same time, violence against women and the murder of women is actually, while at the same time, almost taboo and unspeakable, but actually quite commonplace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that this persistence in a preoccupation with the Ripper and almost romanticising him is entirely unhelpful. And I think that that's yet another reason why this episode is just a mistake. It was a mistake then, and I think it's a mistake now.
Yeah, I think you're I can't disagree with anything you say there. I think with Bob Block in Psycho, at least it is explored. At least you do the female characters in Psycho have a chance to have influence on the story. Her death is investigated by a female character. So you've got that in there, and that adds terror, adds tension and horror to the story, which is great in both the novel and the book. But in this episode, it's made worse by the fact that all the female characters are basically just there to be bodies.
Yeah.
They're presented just to die. Mm. Even the almost fourth victim is just presented there. She sits there in the unbelievably long court scene.
Yes.
Just sit there and, like, you know, don't move. Just sit there and
sit there making notes.
15 minutes that scene is. It's the longest scene in any Star Trek.
It takes a long time for them to try and convince the audience about where they're going.
Which, for something that starts off as a horror thriller, Then you've got a quarter of an hour in a courtroom, and then you've got the craziness at the end.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
We'll talk about that court scene, and we'll begin.
Yeah.
We'll begin with Spock.
Yeah.
And I'll drop the quote in here. I'm not going to be using much clips in this episode in this episode because it doesn't warrant it. Of course, Spock's remarks about why Red Jack, Jack the Ripper, about this creature, feeds on women because he...
And I suspect preys on women because women are more easily and more deeply terrified, generating more sheer horror than the male of the species.
Well, I think that just shows you immediately what Bob Block thinks of women, yes. And that's why he's so... obsessed by Jack the Ripper.
Hmm.
Yeah, if he really believes that to be true, and then you've got like Spock, like being very, very Victorian value Spock, coming up with something like that.
It's written by Bob Block, but it's rewritten by Gene Coon. But Bob Block has the sole credit on this, so one assumes he was happy.
Yeah,
because he could presumably have taken his name off, or he could have insisted on a pen name or something like that.
I think they didn't change much of this. I've read about the script of this. They didn't actually change many of the sequences there.
No,
at all.
I think that line from Spock is very much the writer talking, and by definition also the producers, including Gene Roddenberry, who was heavily involved.
It's quite interesting because, guys, you are actually convert. I was going to come in to this episode and actually defend some of the ideas about it as being quite a good story idea.
Mm.
You know, I was going to probably say about sort of like 40% of this was good. You're really, really changing my mind now, and I'm starting to hate it.
Yeah, okay. Disappointing, but maybe not. I don't know.
But you know what I mean? It's opening up even more.
Part of this, and this is, I'm going to a bit to degree of selfishness. Yeah, I mean, I watched this when I was in my early teens, the first time around in my early teens, and I'm a boy with my childhood trauma. But I mean, like, I loved Star Trek, and I probably paid far too much heed to the characters. I was too into it, frankly. It was more than is healthy. And I used to really enjoy Wolf in the Fold. I used to enjoy watching it, and largely probably because of the final act, which we'll talk about shortly. And also, I did enjoy the courtroom drama. I enjoyed the way they tried to go from Scotty being guilty, hands-on, red-handed, guilty of murder, to this alien ethereal creature, and the way that they moved there. I rewatch it now, and to me it just looks like a show trial.
I mean,
I know what happens, but I mean it just looks like a show trial.
And it is a shame because there are things that are great in this episode. There are, and not just good, great. And the guest stars in it are excellent.
Yes, they are.
They really, really are good. The guy who plays Hengist, who's Piglet.
Piglet, yes.
Piglet's in it. And he is brilliant in it. And, of course, he's in 12 Angry Men, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is, yeah. John Fielder is
adding a different dimension, if you're familiar with that film, and you should be, because it's brilliant.
Listen, go and watch 12 Angry Men. It's a masterpiece.
Yeah, and but of course, like if you know him from there, then you've got this other courtroom drama, and so that ends up a bit when you're trying to switch people's opinions about guilt and innocence. Everything that's good in it doesn't
gel.
There are gelling points in there, but it's just not good enough to carry it through, and it doesn't bear rewatching. What you're saying about enjoying it when you're younger, fine. If you only saw it once, then that's where you need to see it. It's one of those ones that the more you see it, the more you...
What's interesting, though, is that this story is used so many times in different, you know, by different, TV dramas and so on. It's going to come around again. The story is going to come around
again. I don't think it's a problem with the fact of the story itself, per se.
It's the execution of it.
It is the execution of it, because they don't have any female characters that you particularly care about, any regular ones that are really... Uhura's not even in this episode.
No.
Chapel's not even in this episode.
No.
At least in What a Little Girl's Made Of, they had Chapel there, and they allowed her to be the interaction between her and Corby, which was the other Block story
that's much more like what we want, that's the kind of stuff we want to see if
this was done. This would make a great episode if it was an all female cast.
Yes.
Imagine this as a next generation, where you've got the major female cast members going down onto the planet and doing it and then just having it flip it around on its head, and then you've got a completely different episode.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if it had been Deanna and Beverly, going down on the planet, that would have been something to see.
Yeah,
and alters entirely the entire context of the show.
Yeah,
and almost word for word, there'd be some stuff that you would take out, but it would.
You wouldn't have Captain Cock.
You wouldn't have Captain Cock. No, but let's tell you what. Then let's move away then from this unpleasantness and move into the final act of the show, because this is where, if there is any merit to be had, then it's in this section here. Once they've gone through that period of explaining the possibilities of the existence of this creature, then to the point where in fact the creature is sat in the courtroom there, and you have that peculiar little side plot with Kara, who was the name of the dancer, and her fiance, and father, and all that was just that didn't appear to go anywhere apart from just to add a little bit of salaciousness.
It was a misdirection, wasn't it?
Right from the beginning, because the thing is, right from the first sequence where we actually had the cantina. He's Kara's fiance, the bloke with the funny nose. He's sitting there glowering at Kirk and McCoy and Scotty, and then he swishes off with his cape as he goes out the door, and sort of like before.
Yeah, this is
else.
And this is supposed to perhaps to tell the audience that perhaps he's the guy who.
Yeah. So that's the misdirection. Mm. So it's like an episode of Murder, She Wrote or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then it peters out once they get into the court. I see what you mean. I can see that. Interestingly, the father. I watched the last hour of Judgment of Nuremberg this morning on the television. Okay. And which is a film featuring William Shatner plays it, and this guy who plays a father is also in that film as well.
Oh really?
I just thought I'd chuck that in there just to try and add a little bit of lightness to the proceedings before we move on. Hengist. Okay, yeah, Hengist, brilliant. John Field, a brilliant actor. And I love the way that the music comes in and suddenly he's revealed and he's just like the look of desperation.
The swiveled eye.
Exactly. And the audience is like in no doubt because the evidence is pretty flimsy that's been... it's highly circumstantial. It's considerably... This is the thing, Kirk and... Everyone is more willing to believe this really flimsy, complete circumstantial, total bollocks of an evidence that they've just put together. But they will believe Scotty when he says, "Oh no, I didn't kill these people," as he's standing there holding the knife over a dead body, covered in blood. I mean, it's just
I know this looks bad. I've got a perfectly good explanation for it. I blacked out.
No, really, I blacked out. I have to say that with this, and rewatching it and starting to think, well, I think I'm going to have to start laughing at some of this stuff, but we say that life is cheap in Star Trek, and what gets me about it is that when Hengist is killed and they just dump his corpse on the chair, and then his head on the desk like he's some kind of rugby fan who's had just a little bit too much. And it's sort of like, they leave him there and say, "All right, mate, you'll be fine. Give it half an hour. Get him a pint."
I didn't actually think they were going to put his head on the desk. I thought they were just going to sit him up like that.
This is how you treat the dead, Is it really just a shell?
And then basically, and then afterwards McCoy decides to dope everyone up.
Oh, now, yes. Yes, indeed. I've got a tranquilizer. I got some stuff that will tranquilize an active volcano.
He sure is gloomy.
he sure is gloomy. That stuff is... I mean, this is, of course, where it just so jars with the rest of the episode, but it is funny. I've got to be honest here. The sequence when Red Jack takes over the computer and takes over the ship was great.
Yeah.
The sound effects for John Fielder's voice...
Yeah.
Brilliant, the echo that they have there. Technically, you have to respect that. I think that was superb, and I remember it being really unsettling and really quite eerie.
Brilliant.
Genuinely, actually scary.
I love the scene in the turbo lift.
Yes,
with Kirk and Spock when they've lost control of the ship and they're and they're walking and talking out there. They're basically, this is, they're planning what to do and also sorting out the situation they're in immediately.
Yes.
And actually trying to sort out where to go from there. And it is a really, really good, that's the best bit. That is the best bit in the entire episode. Just that little fragment there reminds me a bit when Kirk beams back onto the ship in Wrath of Khan. When they're going,
the walk and talk.
Yeah. It very, very similar sort of dynamic there, isn't it? But that's all that is. Mm. it's great. The visuals, the screen, lovely. They didn't mess about with that in the remastered.
They must have been tempted to do that, but they left that as it was because it is good.
It looked good enough, and you didn't need to. They didn't need to do anything with that.
Find out a way of getting them out of the computer, which they succeed in doing. They go back to the briefing room, and then we have the prefect who, then we have the little change of bodies, which, I mean, yeah, that's quite good. I quite like that, though, when it kept jumping from one body to another, and this Genghis's corpse comes back to life, grabs a woman, with his knife. I mean, although obviously that's a pretty obvious stuntman, isn't it?
The double is the worst. He's got the same makeup as the robot in Return to Tomorrow, isn't he? he's got the worst bald wig ever.
But they managed to somehow subdue him, and they inject him with all of that tranquil junk that McCoy's put in there, and then you have this bizarre scene of everybody who's just like laughing and cackling while they, you know, disperse him into space, and the final sequence just underlines just what an atrocity this is, because they're talking about going back down onto the planet and having a party.
Yeah,
I mean, I mean, this doesn't say much for me as a human being, I've got to say. But if I was Captain Kirk, I'd probably say, well, look, I'll tell you what, guys. Since we've got 5 or 6 hours, go on, Bones. Give me a hit of that stuff.
Yeah.
And let's just go down the planet and have a party. I mean, I think it would have been consistent with the characters had they just done that. Just, you know, picked up a... anyway, it's...
I mean, we haven't spoken about the actors, actually. And we haven't spoken... Originally, when we were going to do this podcast, we were actually looking for good episodes with Scotty.
We were.
You know, and actually, I think that James Doohan is actually pretty good.
Yep.
You know, not for the material he had, but he actually, as an actor, there's some really good bits and pieces where, you know, he actually looks terrified.
Yeah, yes. And he doesn't get a lot to do in this one, apart from saying it wasn't me.
But he looks like he's going to cry. Yeah. Which is really good, you know, sort of, not that it's really good, but, you know, as an actor, he looks, you know...
Well, there's a deleted scene in there we was going to be giving a little bit more to do. There's a deleted scene, well, it wasn't deleted, it just wasn't filmed, but it was in the script, and that was that when Lieutenant Tracy beamed down before she met her demise, that Scotty was going to, or it may actually have been filmed, in fairness. Because if you notice, there's an odd-looking joint where Scotty gets up and is looking at the captain, you know, and apparently he sort of like says a woman, and raises objection to the fact that there is this woman that he has to be examined by, and that's removed presumably because it's even beyond the pale of the miserable standards set by the producers of this show. Anyway. I mean, you know, he would have been given a little bit more to do there. I think that, yeah, I mean, it's as an example of a prominent Scotty episode. I wouldn't put it in the top five. If there are better examples of good Scotty episode, but technically, I suppose it is a Scotty episode, isn't it? Because he is at the centre of things, I suppose.
Yeah, is. He's a pivot point in the story, but it doesn't focus on him. It doesn't focus on what he's going through. It doesn't on where, why he's got to this situation. The stars of the show are still Kirk and Spock.
Yes. Yes.
Even though Spock has turned out to be the worst misogynist out of the lot of them at the moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's got form in this in Star Trek.
That's logic actually, for you.
Yeah. I was actually listening to a podcast about this in preparation. Women at Warp is a feminist podcast that that talk a lot about this episode. They have a whole podcast in which they discuss this episode, and you can imagine how it goes. What they did say is, why did Red Jack just like kill his victims? What, you know, yeah. If it feeds on fear, why did he just kill them?
Yeah,
keep,
yeah.
One of them, so I can't remember which one was. She said, why doesn't he just hang out with people with anxiety? And it's a,
you know, he could be sitting there in the corner just going boom just like, every once in a while, yeah, and then we get a feed off that.
He should just set up a group,
yeah.
Hire a church basement and just like an anxiety support group and just sit feeding off of these people. It's a ridiculous episode of Star Trek, and it's offensive and it's wrong, and I don't think that. But it is an episode that has a legacy, believe it or not.
Mm.
And there have been two sequels that I myself have read, one quite recently, both of which were comics.
Yes.
One in DC's run of when DC had Star Trek, they did a sequel to it, a double episode back in that in betweeny bit between Star Trek 3 and 4. They told some really weird stories where they were set on board the Excelsior.
I remember getting those.
And they did one then. And also Paramount Comics did one in The Next Generation, in which Red Jack Returns takes over the Enterprise D, and Data enters the holodeck, and he creates the Victorian London on the holodeck.
Oh,
and Data enters
along
with Deanna. That's right, it's a Wildstorm one. That's actually pretty decent, actually. But it's curious that it's, and again, it speaks to the obsession and preoccupation that storytellers have with Jack the Ripper.
Mm.
They can't leave him alone.
Well, you see, Jack the Ripper has now, he's in that sort of pantheon of Dracula, Sherlock Holmes, those type of characters.
Yeah, he's been fictionalized.
He's been fictionalized.
Yeah,
and he's not.
He did some horrible real life crimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, against women.
And the investigations into those crimes were completely botched.
You know.
Mm. I apologise for the earthiness of what I'm about to say. One of the corpses, one of the bodies of the women, was picked up by the City of London Police, and it was moved physically and dumped over the border into the Metropolitan Police areas because they were sick of having to deal with these with these bodies, and dumped them over there so that they could deal with the problem. This is the extent of the contempt with which the victims had.
Mm.
The whole thing is an absolute, just awful disgrace and a stain on our society, particularly ours in the UK. It's nothing to romanticise, and it's nothing to turn into entertainment. And I'm baffled by the preoccupation of it.
Bob Block is actually treated as someone who actually almost invents serial killer fiction with Psycho and other stories, and it's become a rich vein for people to because there is an appetite for it.
Yes,
and it may not be your cup of tea, but it is.
No, I know people who do love that shit.
Some people like, but they also love true crime as well. And we see as well with the number of police procedural dramas there are now, there is an appetite for it.
And I'm not speaking to Psycho the movie, for example, which is a fine film. I'm also not speaking in terms of slasher movies, because Halloween is one of my favourite horror movies, but the role of women in those movies is different to what we've just been talking about here.
Yeah.
So my beef is quite narrow.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about the broader fiction about, you know,
in slasher movies now, you will generally have a strong female character.
Yeah,
And also slasher movies, they don't discriminate. Everyone is there, ready to kill.
Hmm.
I think that's what this episode gets lost in now, especially if you're like us and you've got to sit down and analyse it and think what's good about it. The worst thing is about this episode is that there are good things presented to us and things that you want to see expanded upon, but they're just not, and it just goes into this horrible story that it just the corners it cuts are the worst corners to cut.
Mm.
It shouldn't be cutting those corners. It should be exploring those ones, and it should be expanding on them.
Mm.
And that's what the problem is with this episode. It's not got a bad story here.
No,
it's just very, very poorly done.
Yeah, as you say, replace the principal characters with female characters, and you've got a different story.
And what the concept of Red Jack itself, this is actually something from Earth. And this is something that is just chucked in. This is a malevolent thing from Earth.
Yes.
Well, it's not alien.
No.
I always thought of it as being more like that the H.P. Lovecraft stuff again. It's sort of like a weird spirit, or you know, going.
Well, this is what Block is. Block isn't a science fiction writer. No, he's a horror writer.
Yeah. And he is. Yeah, he was. And Lovecraft was a mentor of Block's, as we've discussed in previous episodes. So there's clearly a Lovecraftian connection there. Yeah, definitely. Well, look. I think we've. Is there anything else you wanted to get off your chest about this episode?
Not at the moment.
I think we should be going to football, and we should be doing wholesome activities. Rather than talking about this. This is the first episode of Whom Pods Destroy where we have been almost completely critical of an episode, to the extent where I think it was up to me, and I don't know about you, but if it was possible, this episode would just go in the bin. And it's not characteristic of our podcast, because we celebrate Star Trek. It's also, I hadn't really imagined that we would do episodes about episodes that we think are terrible for one reason or another, because the purpose of the podcast is to celebrate Star Trek. So this episode like Turnabout Intruder, for example, is another one that I would, but at the same time, I'm quite pleased that we actually have had this conversation and got this off our chests. And apologies to any listeners who perhaps felt it was too dark or not what you're used to, or apologies to you listeners who like this episode and maybe now don't like this episode. But we hope it's been of some value, and we will be back next time with, I hope, a much more interesting and much, much better Star Trek. What do you reckon?
Yes, let's all hope that.
That's good. All right, then. Well, in that case, from myself, Terry, and from Derek and Graham, it's goodbye. Bye.
Goodbye.
Thanks once again for taking the time to listen to Whom Pods Destroy. We do very much appreciate it. If you want to know more or listen to more episodes, then go to whompodsdestroy.com. You'll find all of our previous episodes on that website, available for you to listen to or stream or download. We also have our feeds for Apple iTunes and for any other podcatcher that you have. So if you were to subscribe, that would be wonderful. And if you already subscribe and haven't done so already, we would appreciate a positive rating and review. If you've got an opinion about the last episode and you want to get in touch with us, then we're on Twitter at WhomPodsDestroy, or you can send us an email at garth@whompodsdestroy.com. For our next episode, we will be discussing an absolute classic. So join us as we perform the Corbomite Maneuver.